Welcome to the third episode of the Braai Box podcast. This is a brand new podcast that me, Pieter, and Rion, a friend, started a while ago to create the ultimate personal financial education platform for South Africans by South Africans. So let's kick it off, Rion. Why do we make decisions we do, specifically financial decisions?
Yeah, I think it really is something that can be embedded in yourself from an early age. I've actually done a bit of research in this, and it's shown that, you know, it's a large part of the daily decisions that we make, specifically around money, is something that we've got from our parents or the way they did it. And it's maybe not always the actual education that they gave us, so, you know, talking about budgeting, etc., but it's the way they lived with their finances. So it's the example that they've set. Maybe to share a little story around that in terms of my own personal life. I think my mom and my dad made the decision quite early on in their lives that they wanted my mom to be a stay-at-home mom. So my dad always did the providing. And it really put us, our family, in a position of, I wouldn't say we were poor, but we were definitely not rich. So we were really a middle class, but we always needed to look after our money quite well. So that's something that's stuck with me. And as I grew up, the first money memory in my life that I can remember, and it's probably because it had quite an emotional impact on my side, is I really wanted the PlayStation 1 back in those days. So it's like way back.
The OG,
yeah. So it was, I don't know, I was 7 or 8, can't remember exactly where.
Giving away your age.
Yeah, exactly. But in that, my father always said, listen, there isn't money. You need to wait, you need to be patient. And one day the creepy crawly in our pool actually broke, and my dad came home the same day and with a new creepy crawly. And I asked my dad, how much is the creepy crawly that you just bought? And it was almost exactly the amount of a new PlayStation. And I said to my dad, you know, I was like almost angry at my dad. Like, how can you do that? I've been asking for months and months. Mm. And so it's almost that first money thing in my head. It's like, you know, there's never money, but except if there's money. And I didn't understand that until my dad really took me, and that's when my dad realized, okay, listen, we need to educate Rionia. And I think my dad then took me on a journey with him in terms of, he took me through the budgets, even at that young age, saying, this is why we are saying it. So if we're saying there's no money, it doesn't mean we don't actually have money. It's saying that we don't have money for this specific category or this specific item. So that made a big shift in my mind. And from that day onwards, my dad always involved my sister and I in all of the money decisions and in the educational space as well. So if there was a financial advisor over, my dad would always say, come sit with me, come talk around it, ask your questions, because it is almost like a family thing. Well, the point where I want to get to is, yes, my dad made that educational space available to me, and I knew about finances from a very young age. But it was also the fact of how my dad used his money. So I think he did very, very well for my family. So I always felt that he was quite conservative, and there's a good reason for that. He had a family to look after, and he didn't, you know, jump into risky investments or start his own business or, you know, buy a lease property or something like that. I'm not aware of all of his investments, so maybe there were some risky ones, but I wasn't aware of them. And I always felt like, just, can't you just, you know, do one thing and then maybe our lives will change forever? And it naturally isn't that easy, but that almost led me into a space where I'm now today, where I'm a saver, and we'll get to the personalities now. I'm a saver, but I also make almost risky financial decisions. So I'd rather, you know, than buy an ETF that's quite conservative, I'd rather, you know, purchase something in a small business, which is a lot more risky, but the upside is there. And through doing that, I've lost quite a lot of money in my life as well. So, I mean, that's the thing that you need to balance, I guess.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think our financial habits, or kind of our understanding of finances and the way that it influences our decision making, is established at like the age of 7. So kind of thinking back, rewinding your life to that time, what was life like? You know, what was the situation at home? What was the finances? What was the discussion around finances? In your case, you were fortunate to be involved in the discussion. In my case, I wasn't involved in the personal kind of household finances, because I think it's quite an ingrained thing in the Afrikaans community that we kind of ons praat oor geld, you know, we don't talk about money, which unfortunately oftentimes leads to people making financial mistakes because we need to talk about money. That's exactly the purpose of this whole podcast. But so I wasn't involved in that area. I was the same kind of as a 7 year old, didn't understand. I want a McFlurry at McDonald's, you know, it's only back then, I don't know, it was like 20 Rand or 15 Rand. But then I was always told, no, there's no money. But then we go and buy something for the house, like a couch. And then I see, no, but this is 200 Rand or 500 Rand. And I couldn't understand, but this is much cheaper. Why don't we get it? And I think as a young child at that point, we didn't yet understand the holistic picture of we need to make provision for everything. You know, we need food on the table, and you need insurance, medical aid. We need to pay off the bond, your school fees. We just fixated on one thing, like, I want this now, that short-term gratification, whereas our parents, and now that we are in a similar position, being adults, see the bigger picture, and we're like, okay, we actually need to make budget for that McFlurry or that PlayStation.
Mm.
And if there's no money, there's no money. Not because we're trying to be, unkind. It's just because there's other bigger priorities that we need to take care of. And what I think is important to for us is to look back. So one thing that really helped me when I was young, we didn't really get like a standard allowance thing, like just arbitrary every month you get this amount. We had to do tasks around the house. And then what my dad would do is I'll go outside and then I'll scrub the swimming pool and pull out the bossies and, you know, clean the yard, stuff like that. And then he'll tell me, okay, so write down what you've done. And then next to it, write down what you think you deserve to be paid for that. And obviously, at that point in time, you're like, yeah, no, I scrubbed the swimming pool, $300. You know, I sweep the floor, $200. You're like, yeah, now I'm going to be rich. And then we sit down together and he's like, no, there's no way. No, so let me teach you. Now, this task that you've done, how much time did it take you? And this is what it's worth. So what he instilled into my brain at that point in time was understanding the value of money and how we are paid, meaning we need to produce value, and the amount we get paid is proportional to the value being produced. Scrubbing the swimming pool, anyone can do that, so it's a low value task. Yes, it still works, so you get paid, but it's fewer, a lot less than what I thought it was. So that helped me to later understand, if I wanted to make more money, I need to provide more value to society. And also with the whole thing of not just getting an allowance for the sake of it, but actually working for it, now I knew that the money I earned, I had to save, because you feel it much differently when you actually have to work for it as opposed to just receiving it or feeling entitled to, I need to now get this amount. You have to work for it. And that helped me a lot now to understand money doesn't come for free. We need to work for it, and we need to provide value to be paid more if we want to earn more.
Yeah, I think the crucial thing there is we need to realize, as any culture really in our country, it's really the parents' job to educate children, because the school system won't do it. And we know that. We've been through that. So it's the parents' job. And I think that's what you mentioned at the end there, in terms of really getting your child to understand the value of money is so important, because there will be effort, there will be value that you create, and then you'll get paid for the value that you've created. And like you said, it can be instilled on a very, very young age. So I wouldn't say, make your child a slave, but definitely give him some chores. And then, like the exercise you just spoke about. So he doesn't have to work the whole day, but give him something to do. Like, if we are busy in the garden, help us pull out the bosses.
Yeah.
And help us scrub the pool or whatever. But I also just wanted to get back to the decisions our parents make. So I think as a child, you don't, like you said, you don't grasp the holistic view, but they... And you don't really understand the decisions your parents make. Like, I didn't understand it, and it naturally had an impact later in life. So I think my dad made the majority of the time, he made the right decisions, because, I mean, we were very fortunate that we got through varsity and everything without any debt. So he really did provide to our family very, very well. But it's just almost getting to that point in I'm making this decision because of this, and getting that understanding even from a just a young child, like you use your example. So we're not going to buy this McFlurry every weekend because there's a bigger picture. Let me try and explain to you why. So this is the decision I'm making, and this is why, and this will be the greater outcome. So when you buy the couch, you as a family should almost feel proud of it. Yes, we all did it because I didn't have that McFlurry every weekend. We now have a couch.
Yeah, and then teaching children the importance of saving and delayed gratification, because if you learn that at a young age, it's going to put you in a much stronger position later in life. And also back to your point with chores, I think it's a great thing. Also, don't enslave your children. Provide for them for everything they need. And then in addition to that, if they want something, go work for it. Because I think that's reasonable. If you provide, you know, a good house, education, food, all of that, the basic needs are covered, then those McFlurries, those PlayStations, we'll buy that, but let's do some chores and you save and you buy it. Because then also if a child does that, they learn delayed gratification and they learn to work for that. And then when they get to the point of purchasing that PlayStation, they feel much more empowered because now they know I've worked for this. I'm going to take care of this. I'm not just going to, you know, drop the remote just because I got angry because I couldn't defeat the boss on level 20. I paid for this, so I'm going to take care of it. And that really helped me reflecting back. And but we all are different. Maybe you growing up in a household where money was very scarce, very scarcity mindset, and that influences your spending today. Maybe you also that way, or you completely opposite. Oftentimes it happens that the way you've been raised is now you're the complete opposite side, different personality. Mm-hmm. So it's very, very interesting to reflect back on that and really unpacking. And sometimes it's even childhood trauma regarding finances that you first need to kind of sort out as an adult before you can really become successful financially.
Agreed. So it's coming back to your question right in the beginning, is why do we make the decisions we do? So I think that was the one part. So it can be an unconscious, almost behavioral aspect that's been built into you since a young age. So it's just realizing that and then understanding why am I making certain decisions that I am making. But there's also other factors in my mind. So it can be like from a social perspective. It can be from a status perspective. It can be from an emotional perspective. So maybe there's an item that really, you know, makes you feel good. Like example of, you know, having a chocolate every time after you've had dinner. So, you know, it's something small. It's not a big expense, but it's, you know, you're spending some money because of a feeling that you're getting. Or it can be something that you gain status of it. So it might be a certain brand of clothing that you wear, or it might be a certain car that you want to really drive. And you know, you'll go over and above to pay that extra expense because of that. So I guess the answer is there's numerous, you know, reasons why. I think we need to, as responsible humans looking after our finances, needs to understand why. So it might be behavioral aspects. It might be because of status. It might be because of emotional link that I've got to an item, and understanding that and then linking it back again to what we spoke about in the beginning of the podcast, in what is really important in my life. So is this feeling more important than my actual goal that I want to achieve? Is the status of this car more important than education for my child? You know, stuff like that. So then it's understanding the why and then linking it to where do I want to go.
Yeah, exactly. That's excellent. So unpacking all the different things you want to achieve in life, and then prioritizing those things that's aligned with what you value, and then focusing on the stuff that you prioritize that's valuable to you, being conscious of the fact that you'll have to cut down on the things that are not. And that is the whole thing about holistic financial personal finances. It's not like a once-off decision on one area. It's a multitude of different decisions that we need to make.
Okay. All right. Have Umar Roy, and let's see what we think of this.
It's like a party in my mouth, essentially. Just sugar sensation. It also kind of, when we talk about early childhood memories, this is what comes up. It's when you're like young and you have this nice Sunday lunch with family, and you know, you eat your main course, and then the dessert is usually a cook sister there in the fridge.
Which was from a recipe that your grandma's gotten from her grandma. Yeah. Probably dating back all the way to the fur trackers, like you mentioned.
Passed on through generations.
Exactly.
Alrighty. So now that we understand why we make financial decisions and kind of what influences that, we're going to reflect on five different money personalities: spender, a saver, shopper, debtor, and investor. And it's quite interesting. So kind of we're going to explain what that personality is, what they do, what influences the way that they make decisions, and kind of the pros and cons, and lastly, the action points you can take if you are one of those types of personalities. We are all different, so there's not a one-size-fits-all approach to finances. First, it's important to understand what type of personality you are and unpacking that, and then seeing, okay, so this is me. What do I now then do to better my finances? And that's different for all five. So it's quite interesting.
Yeah, and I think just to add on to that, the five personalities is also almost just like a guideline. Mm-hmm. Like you won't fit into one,
yeah,
like exactly. So for me, I feel like I am, you know, more or less a saver, but I'm also a bit more risky in terms of maybe a spender, you know, and aspiring to be an investor. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there might be a few that you realize, okay, I'm actually there a little bit, mm-hmm, but I think the principles will be the same.
Yeah.
So there will be something that you might have like a drawback on, and then that's something you need to focus on.
Yeah, for sure. Cool. So let's start with the big spender.
So a big spender is exactly what it's saying. You are spending big. I think a big spender is that person that really, you know, buys for status, wants the best, wants the newest, best gadgets, wants the best car, wants to live in the best area, in the best house. So it's really the, you know, you're not afraid to spend money, but you're also not spending it on, you know, anything and everything, but you're spending it on the best, so you buy quality. So this person for me is always really like, you know, we always say don't keep up with the Joneses. This is the Joneses.
Yeah.
they're not trying to keep up with anyone. They are the leading pack.
That it's that guy, the guy we're always referring to. Yeah,
exactly.
That is exactly. It's the Joneses.
Yeah. So for that one, it's naturally. So if you really think around, okay, I'm spending, you know, on the best, and always want to have the best at this moment in time, you immediately think, okay, well, you know, you need to have money to do that. So I think the drawbacks of this personality is immediately going into, maybe I'm overspending, maybe I'm making debt where I don't really need to have something that I don't really need. But it gives me a status or feeling of status. And then lastly, I think these are people that are risk takers. So it can be a good thing, it can also be a bad thing. So, I mean, I think risk goes either way. So the higher risk, the higher the expected return. So if you are a high risk taker in terms of, for example, business, it might be actually work out very well for you. And it's normally the person that you will see as an entrepreneur. But it also might be bad. So you don't think of the risk of, you know, having debt as that significant. So you might have a lot more debt than you really should.
Yeah. Yeah. So with each personality, there's definitely some positives. There's also some negatives. So it's really understanding the both, capitalizing on the positives and then being conscious of the negatives. And also, as you mentioned, kind of it can go into different types of personalities. So if you identify that you are a spender, you are someone that you kind of wants to purchase stuff for status, you know, you want the latest iPhone and drive the best car, and, you know, trying to just maintain that public status. You know, you're probably one of those people who post on Instagram every day, you know, reflecting your life, which is not, it's not a bad thing. If you do have the means for it, it's fine, as long as you're not living above your means and trying to portray a lifestyle online that is not the reality that's reflected in your finances.
So important, I think, for this person is to live within your means.
Yeah.
So by all means, spend what you need to spend on that makes you feel good, but just do it within your means. So I think that's the golden rule number one. Spend less than what you make.
Yeah. Yes, and what I've oftentimes experienced with people like spenders, it's difficult for them to invest, because what happens is they earn a salary, then they spend, and then they try to save. It doesn't work. If this is your personality, it's not going to work. So what you need to do is you need to automate the savings and investing part first. Have a debit order going into an emergency fund, into your long-term investments, maybe a retirement annuity or tax-free savings account, automate all of that. Then once you know you've paid yourself first, you've made provision for your future, maybe your child's education, then what's ever left in your account, you go spend guilt-free because you know you've taken care. Now, caveat to that, you first need to understand what is the amount that you actually need to provide for. So that's potentially where a financial planner can come in into the picture. But what we want to do with these personalities is try and make it as easy for you to accommodate that personality. Not necessarily to try and change who you are, because that's very difficult. Rather seeing, okay, this is who I am. So in this case, what I've seen is automating stuff really helps a lot. And also, because you are maybe someone that's kind of like you see something online and now, okay, cool, it's on sale. I need it now. I want to buy it. What helps is to put a 24-hour rule in place, which means that if you want to purchase something, click on it, you know, put it in a checkout, a little shopping cart on Takealot, but then tell yourself, I'm going to spend 24 hours and then I'll make the purchase. Mm. So what then happens is it takes away that short-term
emotional feeling immediately that you have for that product. It takes it almost away. Yep.
Yeah, that impulsive feeling that it makes me good. It makes me feel good to spend money. So it takes that away. It changes from short-term gratification to slightly delayed gratification. And what you'll see oftentimes, more likely than not, after 24 hours of reflecting on this, you'll probably decide, you know what, I actually don't need this, or no, it's actually not such a big special. I search it online at other different stores and it's actually quite expensive. So it's understanding yourself and then putting some barriers in place, saving first, not spending immediately, and trying to avoid the living above your means, especially if you're going to use short-term debt to finance that. Stay away from credit card. We will unpack credit cards and building credit scores in another episode because there are some important factors. But if you know you have that impulsive feeling of wanting to buy stuff, store cards and credit cards could be your downfall. So be very careful.
Yeah. I think that's a very important thing that you mentioned as you started speaking is if you are a certain personality, don't try and almost overhaul yourself and being something different. Because if you tell a big spender, listen, you don't spend anything anymore. You need to focus on something else. You want to make your life miserable. And effectively, you're not going to stick with the plan and you're ultimately going to just go down your own path anyways.
Mm.
So it's rather using the techniques and tools that you can to still live what you want to live in. So still spend the money that you want to spend, but just do it almost in a more thought of logical manner.
Yeah.
And I think that's actually a very good rule in terms of getting away from the emotional spending to the logical spending is giving yourself that time period before you actually make the purchase.
Yeah.
Yes, I really want this item and it's making me feel like, yes, there's also a dopamine spike.
Yes.
But then just give yourself a minute. And then if you sleep over it, you will almost go into that logical thinking a little bit more.
Mm.
I can't even tell you how many times, for example, I've looked at Toyota Hiluxes. And that's also, typical Afrikaner as well. Everyone wants to drive Hilux.
Going to eat your cook sister in your Hilux.
Exactly. Exactly. But it's, I can't even, like I said, I can't even tell you how many times I've looked at a Hilux and said, yes, financially, I can make it work. I can make it work financially. Now I would say, let me just talk to my wife for a minute. And then I've sometimes actually got bought in from her as well, which is quite scary. And then I would say, okay, well, let me just sleep over it. And let me just take a week because, that doesn't move that fast. Let me just take a week. And then the logical thinking comes in. Okay, wait, something more important. Yeah, we want to buy into a practice. Let's rather not. So it's a very, very good rule.
And also something that we mentioned last time, spenders are the ideal target market for salespeople because they know if they play on your emotions and they put some scarcity as well as some urgency to a sale, they're going to persuade you to buy. So, for example, if you are a spender and you need to go buy a car, be careful that you're going to get swayed into buying a more expensive car than what you need. Classic stuff that they'll use that this sale is only available today. Tomorrow you're not going to get it. They're trying to feed into your emotional side, which is going to override your logical side. So in those cases, when you're going to buy expensive stuff, come prepared, know what you want to spend, and put just slow down the process. Whenever anyone tries to speed up it because they're trying to implement that urgency marketing tactic, then do the opposite, slow it down, and then you'll see you will avoid many big financial mistakes.
Agreed. Yeah. Know your price point and stick with it.
Yeah.
And I think that's important for everything that you need to negotiate around price. So vehicles, I think cars as well. Because oftentimes you go look at a house, the agents will say, yeah, this is going to move quick, very quick.
Yeah.
But the property market is slow. Before you go look at at the house, we've got 5 offers and you need to urgently put in an offer, otherwise you won't make it. So it's, like you said, making that urgency feel, it's actually not that, no one's going to die.
Yeah.
Not that urgent.
The world will not end if you do not buy this now.
Exactly.
Trust me.
Just slow down, think about it logically, and then make the purchase.
Yeah. Great. Yeah. Awesome. Cool. So probably the opposite to that is a big saver.
Yeah, like you said, it's really the opposite to the big spender. So it's for me, it's the person that almost dislikes spending. I think this is more or less the personality I see myself in. I really dislike going into stores, purchasing clothes. So personal story, I think my wife has bought, since we've got married, I think I've literally bought myself like 1 or 2 items of clothing. Everything that I wear is for my wife, spending on my behalf. Because I really
I thought you mentioned you wearing your wife's clothes.
No. Yeah, luckily not. No, but so she's luckily the one that doesn't really care about spending, or she's more of a big spender or a shopper that we'll get to now as well. But yeah, if it wasn't for her, I would still wear my clothes that my parents bought me. So thankful. It's really someone that dislikes spending, and it's almost like a negative emotional response to giving out money. And it's someone that would rather see the money in the bank. So seeing a savings account grow, or seeing investment grow, or something like that, much rather than having stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. It's. I think I also have some traits on saving. For me, it's a bit different. I don't like going to the mall. I hate it. And my wife knows that. She also does most of the shopping. And same thing with clothing. I wear what I've had since university, and then some clothes that I usually get passed on from my brothers that's older than I am. So that helps a lot. Shout out to them. But if it comes to this kind of, the mic and the recorder and the camera, when I view it as an investment into a business, then I would lean more towards spending, because I know, yes, I can buy this cheap. It's going to cost me more. So then I'll spend more buying quality products, because I know the long-term value of at least the lifetime would be better. So the problem with savers oftentimes comes with, they could be perceived as stingy, sometimes as cheap, and they know I need to buy this, so I'm going to buy the cheapest thing. I'm going to go into the mall and see what's the cheapest way I can get away. And what is the saying? Penny wise, pound foolish. Mm-hmm. You buy cheap stuff, it's going to break. It's going to cost you more money because now you need to replace it. So you need to be careful as a saver. Whilst as at face value, it's not a bad thing to save money. I mean, it's way better, but also don't be cheap. There's a difference between being frugal and cheap. Frugal is more so, being conscious of your spending and trying to cut down where reasonable, whereas cheap is just buying the cheapest stuff. It's going to cost you more at the end of the day.
Exactly. I think we are much alike in that sense. So as soon as something makes logical sense in my mind that's an investment, I'll go and spend the money. So I think I mentioned in one of the one or two episodes before that I've done a renovation in our house, and it was exactly the same thing. So I wasn't scared of spending money there, because I felt like if I upgrade the house, the value will ultimately come back to me.
Yeah.
So there, it wasn't buying the cheapest taps or the cheapest tiles or whatever. It was more like, what will look best in my house, and then I'll purchase that, because ultimately the value will come back.
Yeah, yeah, it increases the value of the house, which means that it's seen as an investment. So whenever you think about purchasing stuff as a saver, kind of view what is the lifetime of this item going to be, and then make basic decision on that. And sometimes it does mean you need to spend more money to save more money over time, because otherwise it's going to be counterintuitive. So what's also what I found with savers is they oftentimes live a very restricted lifestyle. So they try to cut down cents, rands, wherever they can, and then they kind of restrict themselves from enjoying stuff, the nice stuff in life. So oftentimes they are people who work hard, they earn good salaries, they save a lot of money, maybe they invest it, but then they feel guilty to spend money. They feel guilty of going out to friends or buying a cook sister because they feel like, yeah, but if I could spend 20 Rand on this, but if I save and invest it in the S&P 500, then over 40 years time, I can buy two cook sisters. It's kind of like that mindset. So it could be to your detriment, where you kind of live too far in the future and not today. Typically, I think savers would be your guys. That's kind of the FIRE community, financial independence, retire early, where they want to live very frugally today so that they can retire earlier at the age of like 40, which is very difficult, by the way, and not as easy as they make it seem. But you need to remember that when you're still young in your 20s and your 30s, you're never going to have what you have now. Your health, your energy, your intelligence. So those things may go down over time, maybe not the intelligence part, but you need to live in the moment as well whilst providing for the future. So maintaining that balance and using moderation.
Yeah. So it almost feels like, you know, it depends on the personality, but for the big spender, we're saying, you know, save and invest first, spend a little bit less. For the saver, we're saying, you know, don't worry about every cent. Like, go spend a bit. So go live your life. Exactly.
That's when I look at my clients, there's and I kind of weigh them against each other, there's about 20% of clients that I actually tell them, you need to now spend money. Like, we're going to create a spending bucket for you, and you're going to spend it, and you're going to tell me what you bought. Because, it's understanding how you think about money and accommodating you where you are. Because if you maintain this restricted lifestyle, you'll be able to do it, but at some point it's going to become so miserable that you're just going to drop the whole thing, and then you maybe just convert to a spender and just blow it all. So maintaining a balance.
Yeah, maybe when you get to your midlife crisis, you go buy a Porsche instead of
maybe
leaving it in your retirement fund.
You do retire at the age of 40. Now what? You're going to sit at home. Mm. Now you're calling your chummies, let's go out for drinks, and they're like, no man, we're married and we've got kids now. Where were you when we were 25? When we called you, you wanted to save money. Mm. So yeah, you have to be conscious of that. So kind of, so what action points as a saver do we take? A save, definitely, that's great. See money as a tool, use it effectively. Mm-hmm. If you know that, you know, you're living below your means, you've paid, you've kind of made provision for yourself, security in terms of insurance, medical aid, you've got an emergency fund in place, you know, you don't have any short-term debt, then do make provision for retirement, but also make provision for fun stuff. So practical example, open a spending bucket, you know, have a debit order going into a money market account with one of the providers, put a couple of 100 Rand or 1,000 Rand, whatever your financial situation is per month, and you know that that bucket I can spend guilt-free. If it's depleted, it's gone, it's over. But whatever money I put into that, I can spend, and then try to remove that guilt feeling, because you know you've provided for your future. Then it makes a lot more sense in that person's mind to actually enjoy it.
Agreed. Yeah. So it's really looking at it in living a balanced life. I think in both instances, that's the cross that we wanted to get to, is live a balanced life. Yes, there's important things. Yes, save, have an emergency fund, live within your means, but yes, also enjoy your life. And I think this is maybe a good part to just jump in here with a little bit of a personal story again. So I think I mentioned this before, but my wife is more like a spender and I'm more of a saver. And to really be successful in marriage, we needed to find almost like a common ground.
Yeah.
Right. So we need to, you know, obviously live life. So from my perspective, I need to get out of my comfort zone in spending stuff in what we enjoy. But again, that's then something that we need to agree on, in this is important for our lives. This is what we'll spend money on. Because if that's the almost journey that you'll take, then you'll both get what you effectively need in terms of your personality.
And that's why it's so important that if you are married, or you are a couple, or you have a life partner, to sit together every month and to go through your budget, track your spending, reflect on that, not to try and, you know, keep each other accountable, maybe to some extent, but not to argue, but just to say, like, listen, this is quite important to me. Can we please save up for this? Versus, I'm just going to buy this because it's my money. You know, I worked for it. You know, you can go do what you want, because that never works. You need to really see where can we find alignment. And that is probably a good episode that we can talk about as well, money and
marriage. I actually just put that point down as an idea.
Telepathy. So, and just sharing kind of, because oftentimes it's very rare that you'll find a couple that has the same personality. It's oftentimes like opposites.
Normally opposites.
Yeah.
I mean, opposites attract. I mean, it's exactly. I don't know, principle of life.
And it's a good thing because, yes, for you, it was someone that's maybe more restrictive. You also need to, you know, take the leap and spend that money. And for your wife, maybe she's a bit more of a spender. She needs to kind of just take a step back and save more. And instead of, you know, trying to move in opposite directions, you complement each other's shortcomings in that sense and capitalize on your strengths. That is what makes a team essentially powerful.
Agreed.
Right. So next one is a shopper. So shopper, what is a shopper and how does that differ from a spender? Is it the same thing or is it?
No, I think both of them like to spend money, but it's a little bit different in the sense that the big spender is after status and wants the best. Mm-hmm. A shopper is more of, I just like to spend money and I'll spend my money on everything that I can see almost. So it won't be almost thought of, you know, this is the best, I'll buy a Mercedes because this is the status that I want. But it's rather going into, you know, for me, maybe let me explain it like this. For me, the shopper is almost somebody that is always on Takealot or always on a clothing store website or always in the mall, and they purchase small items the whole time. So the money that they get in almost flows out, and then at the end of the day, you've got a bunch of stuff, but with little value over time.
Okay, so it's someone that kind of gets, they want that short-term spike of dopamine, like I've made the purchase, now I feel well, I've got this new item, I received the delivery, I can open the box, you know, that whole experience is, you know, they like it. So it's not because they buy because of status, it's because they like to buy. It's
just, they like to buy. They'll have, 15 pairs of shoes in the same color.
Yeah.
Just because
it was so special.
Yes. It was a bargain, and I really like this one because it's a different heel or whatever.
It's like they go to the mall, didn't plan on spending anything. They see a special, it's 30% off. And they buy two items because it's 30% off, and they think they save 30%. No, you spend 70% because you weren't interested in buying in the first place. Yeah.
So my dad always had the saying of my mom. So when she goes to the mall, he said, my wife will save me poor. Exactly that principle. I bought this and it was a great special, so I bought two.
Yeah, exactly. So, and then you've got the 12 different shoes.
Yeah.
So these are typical bargain hunters, as you mentioned, beyond one day only. You see, oh, but this thing is today. It's only today I need to buy. So again, if you are a shopper, be careful of marketing tactics because they're going to capitalize on that emotional response. Mm. Marketers know this. They built their whole campaigns around it. So you need to be conscious of that. And just know that, yes, things are on special. And if you were thinking of buy it and it's on special, great. So some kind of action points here could be if you're going to the mall to buy groceries, make a list of items that, you know, you're in your house, you're looking at the fridge and the cupboard, this is what I need, write it down. Mm. And then you go intentionally buy these things and don't get sweated. Because if you oftentimes go to the mall or to the shopping center, first of all, if you're hungry, you're going to buy stuff that you don't need because everything looks good. Mm. And if you don't have a structured list, you're just going to be like kind of looking all around, like, oh, that looks nice, put it in, that looks nice. But if you have a list, then you're focused, get the stuff you need and get out. They're very clever, these guys. That little checkout at the end, those rows of all the sweeties, it's not there by chance. They put it there intentionally because you stand there and wait. And then I look around and you think, oh, I think I'm going to have that. And yeah, what about this? Mm. Next thing you know, you just blew another $1,000.
Yeah, agreed. So I think that's a very, very important point for this person is intentional spending.
Yeah.
So you have that list. Don't just go to the mall and walk around. If you know, listen, I need to buy, you know, shoes for a specific occasion, focus on that.
Mm.
So don't, you know, I'm always going, oh, look at that nice shirt.
Yeah. Yes.
And then buy both. So that's
the 30%
off. Yeah, because this person, yeah, I think it is easy for them to spend money. So they will buy both. So I think it is staying intentional. And I guess for them, it will also be helpful to have, you know, some sort of accountability towards someone. So if you're married, then it's quite easy. You can just ask your spouse, you know, let's go to the mall to buy this. And then the spouse's responsibility is let's go buy this and not go into anything else.
Yeah.
So I think that's important. But also for this person, because it's easy to spend, I think it's easy to make debt. Yeah. And specifically bad debt in terms of retail accounts or credit cards, personal loans, those type of things. Mm. So it's for this person, it is crucial to stay away from that.
Yeah. So if you know you're going to the mall, have a budget, say, like, this is the X amount of rands that I can spend today. And if then you're going to find items that fit into the budget, if it's on special, buy it. But don't go over that and think like, but I just need a little bit more, man. I can just swipe my credit card. It doesn't going to end well. Trust me. So oftentimes shopping kind of personalities have a slight addiction to shopping. They just can't help it. They just want to buy. So you need to understand that and then put some barriers into that. So we talked about, in your case, it's probably best to avoid stuff like store cards and credit cards because it's going to influence you to buy more. What you can also do is having a set amount of money that you can spend when you go to the mall and go and buy stuff intentionally. Have a list of stuff that you want to buy and then go find the best price for that. If you are someone that when you wake up, you go onto all the shopping apps, put a time blocker on that in the morning on your app. You can download like an app that can block it so that when you wake up, it's not the first thing you think about, I want to spend money. It's more so, okay, I can't access this. So maybe in lunchtime, I can look at it and I'm more awake and more aware and more logically thinking than in the morning when you're still half asleep.
Agreed. Yeah, so I think it almost the same advice that we gave to the big savers is have a specific account that you can have, you know, almost that guilt-free spending.
Yeah.
And if it's in there, you know, go do your shopping. Again, just almost reiterating this point, if you have this personality, don't try and change it into something that you're not. So you know you enjoy, you know, going shopping and buying shoes, fine. Just do it responsibly.
Yeah.
Do it intentionally.
Exactly. Don't spend mindlessly.
Exactly.
All right, so then the fourth one is a debtor.
So a debtor is a little bit different to the others in terms of they actually don't really think about money, or they almost intentionally and actively don't want to think about money. So it might be something that, you know, creates anxiety for this person. You know, I'd rather not know about my finances because, you know, it's scary to me.
Mm.
So it's that person that's not really driven by things or emotion. So they're not spending money in terms of status or emotional spending, but it's really just mindlessly spending. So it's, you're still spending money, but you're actually not aware of where your money goes.
Yeah, it's oftentimes those individuals that are scared about the word money. They're just like, finances, personal finance, investing, I don't know what it is. You know, I don't understand it. I don't want to learn. Just kind of blocking it out of their mind. But then in that process, doesn't really understand what it means to spend money and to save money, which could become a very big problem for them today and in the future if they're not providing for their future.
Agreed. But I also can feel for this person because the financial world can be scary and confusing and overwhelming. But it's again, just almost realizing it and then realizing, hopefully through something like our podcast, that it can be quite simple. You don't need to know everything and everything to be a success in your personal finance journey.
Yeah.
You maybe just need to focus on a few things and then, you know, intentionally do that right, and then you'll still be able to succeed.
Yeah, it's oftentimes the fear of money is just because you don't understand it yet, which means that action point, go read books, go read about finances, listen to podcasts, watch videos. Mm-hmm. Yes, it may not be the most for you, maybe your interest level of field of interest, but I can promise you, as soon as you start learning, this whole thing won't become scary or won't be scary anymore. And you will then start realizing and reflecting on your own personal finances, like, oh, okay, maybe I do have a problem. Or sometimes what I see with these people is they kind of get to the end of the month and they'll tell you, I don't know where my salary went. You know, first thing I know, hit my bank account. Next you know, it's gone. Like, I don't even know. I don't think I spend it. It just disappeared. Maybe someone stole it. And then you go through the bank statements, you see, like, oh, and then, you know, you go to Starbucks every day. Or, you know, what's this subscription that you've been paying for the last 5 years?
Maybe used it.
Oh, no, they're not even aware. And the risk is oftentimes with these guys is they spend money on stuff that they don't even know they're spending money on stuff. It's because they're so scared to look into their own finances that it's really to their own detriment. And yes, it's scary to actually take that step and to go through the statements and get that reality check. I got it and I got a massive fright when I did it the first time. But again, if you want to become successful financially, you have to do it. Can't become a fitness mogul if you don't go and pick up the weights. You can have the best diet plan, you can have the best personal trainer, but you need to go pick up the weights. And it's the same thing with finances, and especially important for debtors.
Yeah, agreed. So I think for debtors, the important things really to just think around is, firstly, have a budget. So know where your money is going, know what you're spending on. Secondly is staying away from debt. So, you know, if you can help it, stay away from it. If you're already in debt, find a way to start tackling that. And you can automate that as well to an extent. And then thirdly, I think is important for this person is automate your retirement savings. So you might not be, you know, might not want to think about this or thinking about it already, but it is important. You will thank yourself now. Your future self will really thank yourself if you start doing that. So automate as far as possible, budget, don't make debt, and save for retirement from as soon as possible.
Yeah, and I think it also really helps a debtor to have an accountability partner, especially someone that's more like a mentor, a coach, a financial coach, for example, that can sit down with you and say, okay, I do have a lot of debt. You know, I've got a Woolies store card. I've got one with Ackermans. So I've got a credit card and a personal loan. And, you know, I got this email from this provider said that I qualify for this personal loan. I thought, yeah, no, why not? Let's do it. And I'm so overwhelmed with everything going on. I just don't know where to start. So I'm just avoiding it. So you need someone to sit down with you and say, okay, but let's take a step back. Let's look at everything. Let's go through your budget. What are you spending money on? Let's look at your debt situation. Let's create a debt repayment plan that works for you, that fits into your capacity. And let's take it step by step by step. Because it's oftentimes, once you go down this spiral of being in debt, it's very difficult to get out. And you oftentimes get so involved in this trap that you can't see a way out. So you need someone from an outside perspective to show you the way. And to structure it in a way that makes sense. Again, bring it back to daily tasks that you need to do to get out. Sometimes it does mean it may take months or years, but you need to start somewhere and having a structured plan. And then if it's really a case where you over indebted and, you know, it's just all over the place, restructuring your debt may also be a good idea. But then you need the help of a professional that will guide you in that process.
Exactly, yeah. I think this is probably the person that will benefit the most from a financial coach. Yeah. And maybe, yeah, if you are someone that feels like this is your personality and you do need help, you know, you can drop us a comment and we will be able to, you know, try and help you.
Yeah, awesome. All right, so the last one is an investor. Probably the lacquer one, the exciting one that everyone thinks they are. Most likely. Yeah.
Well, maybe think that you are or wish you are, but it's definitely the one that we all need to aspire to.
Yeah. Which you need to be.
Yes. Let's all become investors and business owners. Exactly. But investors is really the person that is consciously thinking about money. He's aware about money. He has education in money, but he's also linking that with the behavior that he's following. So he's got the knowledge, he's got the, you know, tools in place, but he also has the right behavior. So he does live under his means. He does save and invest whatever, on a continuous basis. So it's really the person that we want to strive towards. It's the person that, you know, is actively driving towards financial freedom and wealth.
Yeah. You are conscious about your money, what's coming in, you're going out. You have a budget, you have a spending plan. you use your money to make money. You understand the concept of compound interest, that you need to start saving early. You need to apply small micro habits today to look after your future self. Someone that typically spends a lot of time educating themselves, reading books, listening to podcasts, maybe even seeking the guidance of a professional once they get to a point where stuff becomes complex, like a financial coach or a planner, and someone that really understands the world of finances, not because school taught them or their parents, because they actively made the decision to become educated. And that's a decision that only you can make. No one's going to make it for you. No one's going to force you to do it. No one's going to ask you to do it. You need to sit still for a moment and think, you know, this is what I need to do. And oftentimes you'll start in one of the other personalities and you'll kind of gravitate towards an investor once you actually put in the effort, start lifting the weights. And what we aspire to help you guys become is an investor, not just solely investor, still having your main personality, which is important, but having elements of investor into the other personalities that will provide for your future self.
Agreed, yeah. So I just to add to that, I think you can be any of the personalities that we already spoke about and being an investor.
Yeah.
So if you follow the sort of guidelines that we've given in terms of, you know, throughout the personalities, it will ultimately drive you into being an investor. Mm. And that's what we want to all aspire to. I think from a investor point of view, if you're a peer investor, you know, from the word go, is something that a drawback can be that you think you know everything and you don't want to ask for advice, or you don't think anyone else can teach you anything. Mm. So yes, even though you're very good at what you do with your personal finances, I do think that all of us, including me and you, can benefit from, you know, having a conversation or educating others. Mm. And I guess that's where we want to get to.
Yeah. Your top athletes in the world also have a coach. They may be the best person in the world in what they do. Mm-hmm. They have a coach, because a coach helps to identify your blind spots and your preconceived biases towards certain decisions. And whilst it is great to become an investor and maybe a DIY investor, it does make sense to at some point have someone to just show you, okay, maybe think about this, think about that. Because we don't know what we don't know. And you'll realize the more you learn, the more you realize the little you know. Because the more knowledge you get on a certain subject, the more you realize how big this could be. And investing is a massive thing, massive subject. Mm. Yes, you don't need to know everything, but get to a point where you're self-sufficient and then aspire to learn more and then spend time with people that know more than you do, so that you can, you know, optimize even further. And don't be ignorant in the fact that you think you know everything and no one can teach you that. That's going to lead to your own downfall. So yeah, always be willing to learn from anyone, regardless of who they may perceive to be on face value. But spend time to get your finances in order as much as possible, up to a point where you may need that next step.
Yeah, agreed. And I can actually say, if you look at my corporate clients, it's the same sort of thing. So we don't go to a corporate client and they don't know what's going on in their business or their industry or the specific thing that they're getting our help on. It's really just having that outside in view, because I do think that it creates a different perspective. So if you're in the detail, oftentimes you don't see your own mistakes. If someone else just comes in, have a different perspective, looks from a different lens, it oftentimes can just get you to a path that's a little bit better. Not necessarily, yeah. So I think in the corporate world, again, we can see that. And it's definitely not because they, like I said, don't know the industry or their business. They actually know it the best.
Yeah.
So it's rather just giving that different point of view. But have you maybe thought of this? And a lot of the time, it's also just in terms of you're focusing so much on the detail, and it's maybe just a process or something that you don't have time to actively think about. So it's, again, just from an outside perspective, can add huge benefit in that.
Yeah. I'm a financial planner, and I will most likely use a financial planner for my own finances, because it's, again, identifying your own biases and your kind of, as you mentioned, it's just stuck in the detail that you don't always take a step back and look at everything. And there are going to be stuff that you're going to miss. That's probably a great personality to have, but always be conscious of the fact that you can still learn and will always need to learn.
Yeah, just to maybe close off on the investor, I think that's, I think we mentioned before as well, it's the one that we want to strive towards.
Yeah.
And if you are in that investor, just keep going. I mean, keep investing.
Yeah, well done.
Keep saving, you know, strive towards that wealth. If you've got financial freedom already, you know, be the wealthy guy, be the Christo Visser.
And yeah, maybe not. And give back, pay it forward. What you've learned, share it with your friends around the braai. Or maybe create the YouTube channel and share what you've learned. You don't need to be an expert, just share what you know. And I think that's how, again, how we can build a better South Africa is if what we know, we teach you, you learn something, you teach someone else and you help each other. And that's a great position to be back, to be in, to give back. Not, and I don't mean like necessarily give money, but give your time, give your insights.
Give your knowledge.
Give your knowledge, give your opinion on friends and family stuff that you can help them move forward as well. Don't keep all that knowledge for yourself. Right. So then to just kind of tie everything into one that we discussed today. So money is behavioral. Yes, there's a lot of technical stuff around it, the education, the literacy that we're going to learn, but it's very behavioral and you're never going to make a decision or the right decision if you don't understand your own personality, your own behavior, your history with money and how that influences your behavioral status today. Sometimes it means that you can sit down and reflect. Sometimes it may even mean you need someone's help, maybe a coach, or sometimes even if there's like something bad, a professional, a psychologist that can really unpack what happened in the past that influences your decisions today. So that is very important that we all need to realize.
Mm-hmm.
And also we need to understand our why. Why do we spend money on certain things? Does it give us status? Does it give us a little dopamine hit? Does it terrify us, like, no, we don't want to spend anything? Or is it because we know that if I spend money now, it will work for me in the future? Understanding your why and then building a plan that resonates with that and using your personality to your benefit to eventually gravitate towards the investor personality whilst maintaining your current personality, but adding elements of investor into that, because that is how we're going to try and build the true wealth over the long term. And exactly.
So I think, yeah, just adding on to that as well, again, is really just understanding yourself. So you are the person that knows yourself the best. So just, you know, go and think consciously about why you're making the decisions that you are making and start today to really make the decisions to improve that upward curve of your financial life, in your journey. But like I said in the beginning as well, each decision will have an impact. So it can either be positive or it can be negative. So I think the important thing is really to understand your why first, identify maybe areas where you need to change, and then embed that into your daily life. So make it a habit.
Yeah. Break it down into small, manageable tasks, day-to-day stuff that you can do. Investing, saving R5, investing R5, you know, spending less, living below your means and doing that consistently. And get an accountability partner, maybe your partner, life partner, maybe it is a friend, maybe it's a colleague, maybe it's a coach, to say like, listen, I'm going to do this and this is how I'm going to do it. I want someone that I can, that can help me being accountable. Not because it needs to feel like a chore, but because you're really taking this serious. And as soon as you kind of make it public in that setting, you're going to make it an actionable thing. It's not just going to be like a dream that I want to do. It's going to be like, no, it's a goal that I need to achieve. But yeah, quite a very interesting conversation that we had today. We hope that this helped you guys to better understand kind of your whole behavioral side of personal finances. It is something that we will revisit throughout this series of episodes because it does play such an important role in the financial decision making. But we hope that you enjoyed it. We definitely enjoyed our Cook Sisters. This is definitely a winner. I'm going to eat the rest just after. Can't wait.
Can't wait. Thanks, Omar Roy, again.
Yeah, shout out to Omar Roy. And if there are any other items that you guys want us to review in future episodes, drop us a comment. We'll choose the one that has the most likes. And we'll see you in the next episode.
See you in the next one. Thanks,
Peter. Awesome. Cheers.